inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
It always amazes me how many everyday people are out there doing such awesome things because of their rental properties. And my guest on the show today is a great example of that. She was a stay-at-home mom, and she was going to need to go back to work and start making some money. But she really didn't want to leave her daughter. So she figured out that if she could buy some rental properties, she could generate some money and be able to spend some more time with her daughter. So she went out there and she did it. And today she still works part-time, but she does the work that she wants to do on her schedule. And the rental properties give her that freedom and that flexibility. She's got a great story, and we'll get into it after we get a quick word in from our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll meet Jennifer McQueary from Charleston, West Virginia. The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified, and I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056. Having to evict a tenant is painful. The best way to protect yourself from evictions is to screen tenants, and the best way that I know of to screen tenants is TransUnion Smart Move. It's a really valuable online screening tool delivering credit, eviction, and background reports in minutes. And their proprietary tenant credit check predicts evictions 15% better than generic credit scores. See why over 4 million landlords have used SmartMove to make better leasing decisions. Use code RENTAL25 at checkout to save 25% at tenantscreening.com. That's code RENTAL25 at tenantscreening.com. So you were a stay-at-home mom, and your daughter was getting older, and you were going to have to go back to work, and you really didn't want to. And you were trying to figure out a way to stay at home. Do I have that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't want to leave her with anyone.
Yeah.
When she was younger, so I kept like delaying going back to work. And then when it was time for her to go to kindergarten, I thought, okay, now's my opportunity. But I wanted something where I could always be at home when she was at home.
Right.
And real estate turned out to be the perfect thing.
That is great. So I want to walk through exactly how rental properties enabled you to spend more time with your daughter. Why don't we start with you telling us what your portfolio looks like today, and then we'll kind of take a step back and figure out how you got there.
Today, I bounce around between around 40 to 45 properties at a time, mainly single family homes. I have a handful of apartments, but it's just because like there's a duplex behind a house. So I kind of ended up with a couple of apartments by accident.
Okay.
Single family homes. I'm in a very bread and butter price range of your working class single family home in a nice area.
Okay. And so the rental properties have just basically given you the freedom to do what you want to do. So you still have some jobs that you do, but I mean, you don't have a steady 9-to-5 job every day, but you're able to do what it is that you want to do because of the rentals, right?
Right. And it has spoiled me entirely. I can never, ever go back to work at a 9-to-5 job for somebody else.
So
once you get in a period of time where you kind of do what you want when you want, it's just difficult to transition back.
So with that many rentals, has it become a full-time job, that just keeping up with all your properties and your tenants and turnovers and all that?
Not really.
Okay.
It is what I consider my main job, but I have it streamlined really well to where it's just not become a burden at all.
Awesome. So tell me, like, how do you have things streamlined? Like, what kind of things are you doing to make things not very time consuming?
I use Buildium for my property management software. That has helped tremendously. When I show houses, I do a one-time open showing. Like, I usually show at noon, And that way people, if people are working a 9-to-5 job, they can come during their lunch hours and I'll do it, you know, a 12-to-1 showing. I have a form for everything. Once I have a need to write up something one time, I keep that as a form. So next time I just use that same form. I just try to make everything you can imagine is on my website so that any questions are already answered for people on the website.
How about collecting rent? Like that must be a lot of work collecting all those checks every month.
No, it goes through Buildium. So the tenants, it automatically kicks them out an email 5 days before the first of the month. They go onto the website, pay their rent there. I don't ever have to handle a check.
Awesome. So everyone's paying you electronically through their bank.
There are a handful that don't.
Okay.
I have a couple of older tenants that they just don't do the internet. And so I do take checks from a handful, but not many.
Okay. Now, another thing that you're doing that I love and I think is a great idea is you've got a handyman that works for you exclusively. Can you tell me about how that works?
I've gone through many over the years, and I've always had to fire them at some point because they would work great for a while, and then all of a sudden things would fall apart, and I'd have to get rid of one or two or three. And this guy's been working for me for years. He's spectacular, so I hang on to him. And he's not allowed to go anywhere else because I know he can do – he can't do everything, but he does probably – 98% of the maintenance that I need done. He does not do my heating and cooling, and he does not do my roofing.
Okay. So how does that affect things? And I know that you have, a good number of rentals. So like you're able to have someone that's working for you. Is it a full-time job for him or?
It is.
Okay.
And if I could, if he had 80 hours a week to work, there would be enough to do for 80 hours a week.
Yeah.
But I tell him, work 40 and be done. There's nothing, like I have a lot of things that aren't necessary to do that I like done. So he has to take care of current tenant maintenance first. Anything, if somebody calls with a leak or some type of issue, they come first. After that gets done, then he can go over to any vacant units and start getting those ready. If those are all done, then he can go to the flip house and work on that. So there's never a time when there's nothing to do, but there's also never a time when we're neglecting the current tenant.
Right. So does it end up being cheaper having him work for you full time than having to contract out if you have a leaky faucet and you've got to pay someone to go over there? That might cost you $200. Like, so does it actually end up being cheaper having him work for you full time?
Yes, it is much cheaper for him. I wish I could pay him more than I pay him.
Yeah.
I just don't have the income to be able to pay him more.
Right.
But he makes $15 an hour and he's full time versus if I had to bring a plumber in, I might be paying $60
an hour. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think that's awesome. I mean, I think when you can get to that point, I think that's great because the alternative would be paying somebody more money to go over there and fix the problem or you having to go over there and do it. So you've basically bought back some of your free time by paying him $15 an hour.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Okay, so let's talk about the strategy for buying rentals. Are you buying properties that are ready to go, or are you fixing up properties?
For me, the worse the property is, the better, because that's what I enjoy. My kind of criteria is I'm looking for a single family home in not so great condition and not something that just needs a little paint and carpet, but I like them bad.
Okay.
It does have to be in a good, safe area. And I want my after fix up value to be around in the $60,000 to $80,000 range, which is a good range here in West Virginia. Other markets, you couldn't get anything decent for that, but we're in a lower income market, so that's a good market here. I also require myself to have two exit strategies with every house I buy. So if I decide to flip it, there's got to be enough equity there to flip and make money. Or if I decide to rent it, I have to keep my numbers down low enough to still make money renting.
Okay. Now, when you first started, you were working with your cousin to rehab the properties. How did that work out at the very beginning? I guess you were doing a lot of the work yourself at the beginning.
Yeah, in the beginning, like, I'm one that just like, oh, let me flip some houses and just kind of jumped in and started doing things with zero knowledge. And I talked my cousin Eric into coming and helping me because, you know, he was a lot stronger than I was. And I just, there was physically some stuff I could not do. So we were just learning everything as we went and kind of buying the tools that we needed as we needed them, going to classes on how to install a faucet, how to lay tile, how to do this or that. We were learning it. YouTube's a great resource. Mm-hmm. We were learning it and then going and doing it. And I think Eric and I did the first 7 houses, just the two of us by ourselves.
Okay. Now, at some point, you stopped doing that. And I think that's important to point out. And I think a big part of your success is that at the beginning, you didn't have much money to get started. So it was cheaper for you to put your time into it because you're trying to eventually get these properties performing so that you can spend more time with your daughter. But you invested that time up front. And that paid off long term, right?
It did. Yeah, it worked in the beginning, and I had to sometimes drag her to jobs. Mm-hmm. Okay. and she still laughs at that today about, you know, getting in the little flat cart and Lowe's and going around Lowe's and, you know, talking to the sales guy. And she still remembers being kind of, and she demo for a 6, 7, 8 year old. It's a wonderful thing.
I'm sure.
So I just drag her along sometimes, but there did become a point where I realized that I'm not that fast at doing these things because I don't do it every day. And so sometimes bringing in somebody and paying them a little bit of money to do something was in my best interest because mm-hmm. I could get the house fixed up so much faster. So there did come a time where I thought, okay, you know, I don't need to be there every day, all day. I need to turn this over to somebody that knows what they're doing.
Right.
And they can get it done so much faster.
Right. Yeah. Cause they're doing it every day. I mean, so if you have a plumbing job, you bring in a plumber, he's going to be able to do it so much faster than you watching YouTube and trying to figure out how to do it,
yeah.
How to do it. Now, one thing that I think is interesting about you is you're not really caught up with the numbers. A lot of people obsess over the numbers on the property that they've got to buy it for this exact price and the rehab is going to be this exact amount. You're not really big into the numbers. Can you explain that to me?
I think I just have a different brain than most people. I jump in rather than analyzing too much. I just jump in and do things, which is good and it's bad. Mm-hmm. But I think so many people sit on the sidelines and say, "Oh, I'm not gonna get in real estate right now because it's not the right time," or "I'm gonna make mistakes." And I'm like, just do it because you can make lots of mistakes in real estate mm-hmm. and still come out ahead. I still make mistakes every day.
Yeah,
you know, buy the wrong house, you know, do the wrong thing to the house. What, it doesn't matter. Real estate is forgiving.
It really is. I was just going to say that. Yeah, real estate is very forgiving, and given enough time, things really kind of work out. So, do you have a general ballpark on what a rehab is going to cost you, or are you going into every deal kind of blind, or has it just kind of, you kind of have a ballpark because you've done so many rehabs?
I never sat down and did numbers like most people do. And it's funny because I was married to an engineer who does numbers like crazy,
yeah.
You know? And so he couldn't wrap his head around, you know, what I was doing.
Right.
But I just kind of walk in now and I say, oh, it needs this, 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 this. And it'll probably cost me around $20,000. So I'm probably going to budget 30 to 40.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm going to over budget, but I'm not sitting down and saying I need carpet this many square feet at this price and working out those prices.
Right.
And I just never did that.
Yeah.
I just think you throw a big number up there because it's going to, if you sit down and put the numbers together, I might come out with a $15,000 budget and then it's still going to cost me 30.
Right.
Because everything, you find so many things wrong with a house when you remodel that you never could have seen.
Right. Absolutely. Right.
I just usually throw a much bigger number out there than I think. And if I come in at 15, spectacular. There's extra money in my pocket.
Right. Right. How about budgeting for repairs? Like, do you set money aside for ongoing maintenance, or have you reached kind of a critical mass where you have so many properties that are generating rent every month that you're just able to handle anything that might come up?
Yeah, I did not ever really set money aside, and I should have. And I think new landlords definitely should do that, because I could have gotten into a world of trouble had something big happened in the beginning when I only had a few properties. Now that I have, 40-some, there's always money sitting there in the account. Like last month, I had to put a roof on one house and a heating and cooling unit in another house. So that was a lot of money coming out in 1 month, but yeah. The money is kind of there and it's constantly going in and out.
Right.
So it's,
right.
It's one of those things where you get that many and it's easier to deal with those Absolutely. Big problems that come along, because yeah. They're coming along every month. When you've right. got 40, there's a roof, there's something big
yep.
every month.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like a really interesting thing to point out, especially for anyone brand new. Like I always tell people having one rental property is really the most dangerous thing you can do, because if you have to buy a roof and you only have one property, you got to figure out where that money is going to come from. But as you get more and more rental properties, it becomes easier, would you say?
Absolutely, with yeah. maintenance and with vacancy.
Right.
In the beginning, if I have five properties and I have one vacant, it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
If I have 40 properties and three go vacant, four go vacant, I don't care.
Right, right, right.
It's okay.
Now, do you think that with the maintenance costs, like not being something that you worry about too much, do you think having the handyman working for you full-time makes maintenance cheaper and easier, because you're paying him his $15 an hour and that's set? So you really just have to buy any materials that he might need for a repair.
Right. So money-wise, it works. And time-wise, for me, it works, because I can just give one guy a giant list and then he just works on that list as it makes sense to work on that list. So I don't have to, I'm not dealing with multiple contractors or yeah. Or different people at all. I just deal with the one guy, give him the list, and he goes and does his own thing.
Yeah.
So time-wise, it saves me a lot, and yeah. money-wise. And I've got that set amount. I know how much I'm paying him every month.
Right.
So
right.
I've got that set,
yeah.
set amount.
So when you have a turnover, like, is he able to go to the property by himself and say, like, figure out what needs to be done? Or do you have to go over there and take a look at it and figure out, okay, well, I think, maybe these walls need to be painted. So I guess how involved are you with actually going to the properties?
It's a little both on whether he does it himself or I do. We both do, but typically he goes and gets started. I typically come in and video once the tenant moves out. And then he gets started. He knows if the walls need painted or if the floor needs repaired or,
okay.
So he can go in and do that. But I usually come and nitpick a little more than he does. So he'll get started and be working. And when it's close to time to show it, then I'll come in and say, oh, this also needs done, that he probably saw it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm just probably a little more nitpicky sure. than he is. So I am going, and then I do video again before anybody moves in. That way I've got that before and after video on every tenant in case there is an issue when they move out.
That's a really smart idea. So if the tenant tries to tell you, hey, this big hole in the wall, this was here when I moved in, we didn't cause this damage, you can just pull up the video and show them what the condition of the house was in when they moved in.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So has it saved you ever? Like, have you had to use the video, or is it just kind of a deterrent from the tenant trying to pull something over on you because they know that they have that you have that video?
They don't know I have that video.
Okay. Okay.
I don't tell them. I video it before they move in, so nothing's there yet. I video it. I upload it to YouTube as an unlisted video, so nobody can see it unless I provide them a link.
Okay.
So when they move, if they say, oh, this was, you know, this was in perfect condition when I moved in, I can send them that link to the video from when they moved in and send them that link to that video when they moved out.
Okay.
And that, there you go.
That stops it.
I just had a tenant get mad at me because she thought she moved out with a pristine apartment and then wanted to come back and rent from me 2 months later. And I told her no, because her apartment was disgusting when she left and she claimed that she had cleaned it. I just sent her the video. I'm not sure how you see that as clean, but it was disgusting.
Right.
So no, I'm not re-renting to you.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, it's like, you really can't argue with the video. And did she just kind of go away after that?
With some choice words, yes.
Okay. So now, with having your handyman, with having the rent payments be automated, what really is there for you to do, like, on a daily basis? Like, is there really much work? It sounds like you've really got things set up to where you don't really have to be involved too much.
I do and I don't. I do spend a lot of time on it, but I don't. But it's definitely not full-time work. I do a lot of the showings. I do deal with a lot of tenants. And then I have to input all their information into the system. So, of course, you have to get the information into the system in order for the system to take over.
With dealing with tenants, that's probably just like a phone call here and there, maybe a text message.
It is. Right. It's more the prospective tenants, I guess I should say.
Okay.
When I've got the vacancy dealing
with
that.
Calls and,
Which is the most frustrating part, I think, of any landlord's job is dealing with the prospective tenants, because you can put out, you know, your ad saying 3-bedroom, 2-bath, you know, 2,000 square foot home. And the first question they'll ask is, how many bedrooms is it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, you know, it's very frustrating to answer the questions that are, I mean, the answer is literally right there in front of them in the ad. And it's frustrating, but you just answer the question and move on.
Where are you advertising your rentals?
Mostly Facebook.
Okay. Okay.
I don't do any print advertising anymore. I used to do some of the, you know, Zillow and those sites, but I've strictly gone to Facebook at this point.
Wow. Well, congratulations. I mean, I'm really so happy to see that you were able to figure this out and you never had to go back and get a full-time job. I just think this is really inspiring and really awesome. So if anybody wants to learn more about you or look you up online, where's the best way for people to find you?
My rental website is oldworldrentals.com. And then I do have another site that I'm just kind of getting started for our local landlords, just kind of giving some information. And that one is smalltownlandlord.com.
If you missed that or you want to look it up later on, I've got a link to Jennifer's information on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode234. I'd like to thank today's sponsor for making this episode possible. It's Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. What I love about Chaley is that she's more of an educator than a salesperson. She takes the time to really understand what you're trying to do, and she'll help you put together a plan and figure out all the financing for you. Working with investors is all she does, and she's got access to tons of different loan programs. If you want to find out more, you can check out her website at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's RIDGE. lendinggroup.com. If you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will waive all of the pre-qualification fees. NMLS 42056. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to the podcast. We'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.